M. The leaked version of Hill's Meta Review included all the same papers that formerly supported his gung-ho promotion of IVM as a miraculous cure for COVID. Hill had altered only his conclusions. Now he claimed that those studies comprised a low quality of evidence, and so although they yielded a highly positive result, Hill assigned the result a low certainty. He could then declare that WHO should not recommend IVM without first performing long-term, randomized, placebo-controlled studies that would require many months, if not longer. Someone got to him, suggests Corey. Someone sent him the memo. Andrew Hill has been captured by some really dark forces. On January 7th, Dr. Lawrie summarized the overwhelming evidence from her rapid review in a video directed at British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, urging him to break the logjam and roll out IVM immediately. Her video, says Dr. Corey, was absolutely convincing. She forwarded the video appeal to the British and South African prime ministers on January 7th. She heard nothing from either. On January 13th, 2021, Dr. Lawrie used her convening power to assemble an invitation-only symposium of 20 of the world's leading experts, including researchers, physicians, patient advocates, and government consultancy advisors, to review her meta-analysis and make evidence-based recommendations on the use of ivermectin to prevent and treat COVID-19. She called the conference the British Ivermectin Recommendation Development, or BIRD, study. Tess Lawrie did exactly what WHO should have done, says Dr. Corey. She made a thorough, open, and transparent review of all the scientific evidence. During the day-long conference, the conferees reviewed each study in Dr. Lawrie's rapid meta-review, agreeing that the evidence supported an immediate rollout. Before adjourning, Dr. Lawrie and the scientific panel committed to conducting a full-scale Cochrane-style meta-review of all the scientific literature. Due to the mortal urgencies, they pledged to reconvene in a much larger group on January 14th. In the meantime, Dr. Lawrie managed to reach Andrew Hill by phone on January 6th, 2 days after the Daily Mail leaked his meta-review. She informed him that some of the leading lights of science had agreed to collaborate on the Cochrane-style meta-review, and she proposed that Hill should join the effort as a collaborator. She offered to share her data with Hill, and after the call, she sent him her spreadsheets. Dr. Lawrie had coordinated many Cochrane reviews for WHO and was indisputably among the world's ranking experts in systematically reviewing study data. Dr. Lawrie invited Hill to co-author the Cochrane review and to attend the next BIRD meeting on January 13th. It was an exciting opportunity. Under normal circumstances, Hill should have pounced on this chance to serve as lead author with some of the world's most prestigious researchers in creating a professional, bulletproof, evidence-to-decision framework for the WHO. He was nevertheless non-committal. He did agree to review Dr. Lawrie's spreadsheet. Dr. Lawrie and her colleagues launched a marathon effort to conduct a brand new review of all published studies in the medical literature from scratch, assessing each for power and bias. She presented her draft to the exclusive BIRD group in mid-January. All agreed that the common sense approach was to release ivermectin. She submitted the protocol to Cochrane for external scientific review. British and Scandinavian scientists founded the Cochrane Collaboration in 1993 to address pharmaceutical industry corruption that had become pervasive in clinical trials for new drugs. Today, the Cochrane Collaboration is a coalition of 30,000 independent scientists and 53 large research institutions who volunteer to routinely review industry data using evidence-based science to advise regulatory agencies. Cochrane seeks to restore integrity and standardized scientific methodologies to the crooked realm of drug development trials. Cochrane uses standardized parameters and rigorous methodologies for evaluating evidence. Cochrane reviewers systematically assess the power of each individual study within the meta-review, interpreting data to identify and discount for bias, and to score each study as high, moderate, or low certainty evidence, and to determine whether it's acceptable to pool the data in a single meta-review. Dr. Lawry knew that to make its ivermectin determination, WHO would rely on Hill's study and another study from McMaster University known as the Together trial. McMaster was hopelessly and irredeemably conflicted. NIH gave McMaster $1,081,541 in 2020 and 2021. A separate group of McMaster University scientists was, at that time, engaged in developing their own COVID vaccine, an effort that would never pay dividends if WHO recommended ivermectin as standard of care. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was funding the massive Together trial testing ivermectin, HCQ, and other potential drugs against COVID in Brazil and other locations. Critics accuse Gates and the McMaster researchers of designing that study to make ivermectin fail. Among other factors, the study targeted a population that was already heavily utilizing ivermectin, creating a confounding variable placebo recipients could obtain over-the-counter ivermectin that would clearly hide efficacy. McMaster University researchers would certainly know that a positive recommendation for IVM would cost their university hundreds of millions. The Together trial organizer was Gates trial designer Ed Mills, a scientist with heavy conflicts with pharma and a reputation as a notorious industry biostitute. Dr. Lawry knew that the only way to salvage the WHO guidelines and produce a high-quality scientific study was to persuade Mills to do a full-scale Cochrane collaboration meta-analysis. The following week, she spoke to Hill again, this time by Zoom. The Zoom call was recorded. During her first conversation with Hill, Dr. Lawry had concluded that the techniques that Hill employed throughout his meta-review were deeply flawed, and that Hill lacked the experience to perform a systematic review or a meta-analysis. I was surprised he had been given the job. In fact, the transcript of her January 13 conversation suggests that Hill was completely unfamiliar with the requirements of a systematic review, which requires researchers to evaluate and score each study using uniform criteria to assess power and the risk of bias, and to conduct a sensitivity analysis to exclude studies with high risk of bias. This kind of review necessarily judges the reliability of the authors of each participating study. The Cochrane reviewers must be prepared to make harsh judgments about the work quality, integrity, and potential prejudices of each listed co-author of all the studies included in their review, based in part on their individual competence and the financial conflicts of interest potentially affecting each researcher. But Hill, bizarrely, had included the names of all the authors of all of his 7 accumulated studies on the list of the co-authors of his meta-review. That's the equivalent of asking the catcher in a baseball team to also play the umpire, says Dr. Corey. No one with any familiarity with the game would make that mistake. Hill was supposed to be judging these authors. Instead, he treated them as his collaborators. Dr. Lawry gently informed Hill that that was irregular for a meta-analysis, adding, "When you do a systematic review, you usually don't include the authors of the studies because that inherently biases your conclusions. It's got to be independent." Dr. Lawry explained that Hill's paper, in addition to listing as co-authors the researchers whose work he was supposed to be evaluating, makes no pretense of systematically grading evidence according to standardized protocols. Those deficiencies make it utterly useless, she explained, for providing clinical guidelines to the WHO. Furthermore, Hill's meta-review looked at only one outcome, the deaths of COVID patients, which was only a small subset of the criteria and endpoints in the studies he had analyzed. She told Hill, "You don't just do a meta-analysis when there's all those other outcomes that you didn't even meta-analyze. You just meta-analyze the death outcome, using only a fraction of the available evidence, and then said, 'Oh, we need more studies.'" Dr. Lawry asked Hill to explain his U-turn on ivermectin, which his own analysis found overwhelmingly effective. "How can you do this?" she inquired politely. "You are causing irreparable harm." Hill explained that he was in a tricky situation because his sponsors had put pressure on him. Hill is a University of Liverpool virologist who serves as an advisor to Bill Gates and the Clinton Foundation. He told me his sponsor was Unitaid. Unitaid is a quasi-governmental advocacy organization funded by the BMGF and several European countries, France, the United Kingdom, Norway, Brazil, Spain, the Republic of Korea, and Chile, to lobby governments to finance the purchase of medicines from pharmaceutical multinationals for distribution to the African poor. Its primary purpose seems to be protecting the patent and intellectual property rights of pharmaceutical companies, which, as we shall see, is the priority passion for Bill Gates, and to ensure their prompt and full payment. About 63% of its funding comes from a surtax on airline tickets. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation holds a board seat and chairs Unitaid's executive committee, and the BMGF has given Unitaid $150 million since 2005. Various Gates-funded surrogate and front organizations, like Global Fund, Gavi, and UNICEF, also contribute, as does the pharmaceutical industry. The BMGF and Gates personally own large stakes in many of the pharmaceutical companies that profit from this boondoggle. Gates also uses Unitaid to fund corrupt science by tame and compromised researchers like Hill that legitimizes his policy directives to the WHO. Unitaid gave $40 million to Andrew Hill's employer, the University of Liverpool, 4 days before the publication of Hill's study. Hill, a PhD, confessed that the sponsors were pressuring him to influence his conclusion. When Dr. Lawry asked who was trying to influence him, Hill said, I think I'm in a very sensitive position here. Dr. Lawry, lots of people are in sensitive positions. They're in hospital, in ICUs dying, and they need this medicine. Dr. Hill, well, Dr. Lawry, this is what I don't get, you know, because you're not a clinician. You're not seeing people dying every day, and this medicine prevents deaths by 80%. So 80% of those people who are dying today don't need to die because there's ivermectin. Dr. Hill, there are a lot, as I said, there are a lot of different opinions about this. As I say, some people simply... Dr. Lawry, we are looking at the data. It doesn't matter what other people say. We are the ones who are tasked with looking at the data and reassuring everybody that this cheap and effective treatment will save lives. It's clear. You don't have to say, well, so-and-so says this and so-and-so says that. It's absolutely crystal clear. We can save lives today if we can get the government to buy ivermectin. Dr. Hill, well, I don't think it's as simple as that because you've got trials. Dr. Lawry, it is as simple as that. We don't have to wait for studies. We have enough evidence now that shows that ivermectin saves lives. It prevents hospitalization. It saves the clinical staff going to work every day and being exposed. And frankly, I'm shocked at how you are not taking responsibility for that decision. And you still haven't told me who is influencing you. who is giving you that opinion, because you keep saying you're in a sensitive position. I appreciate you are in a sensitive position. If you're being paid for something and you're being told to support a certain narrative, that is a sensitive position. So then you kind of have to decide, well, do I take this payment? Because in actual fact, you can see your false conclusions are going to harm people. So maybe you need to say, I'm not going to be paid for this. I can see the evidence, and I will join the Cochrane team as a volunteer like everybody on the Cochrane team is a volunteer. Nobody's being paid for this work. Dr. Hill, I think fundamentally we're reaching the same conclusion about the survival benefit. We're both finding a significant effect on survival. Dr. Lowry, no, I'm grading my evidence. I'm saying I'm sure of this evidence. I'm saying I'm absolutely sure it prevents deaths. There is nothing as effective as this treatment. What is your reluctance? Whose conclusion is that? Hill then complains again that outsiders are influencing him. Dr. Lowry, you keep referring to other people. It's like you don't trust yourself. If you were to trust yourself, you would know that you have made an error and you need to correct it, because you know in your heart that this treatment prevents death. Dr. Hill, well, I know for a fact that the data right now is not going to get the drug approved. Dr. Lowry, but Andy, know this will come out. It will come out that there were all these barriers to the truth being told to the public and to the evidence being presented. So please, this is your opportunity just to acknowledge the truth in your review. Change your conclusions and come on board with this Cochrane review, which will be definitive. It will be the review that shows the evidence and gives the proof. This was the consensus on Wednesday night's meeting with 20 experts. Hill protests that NIH will not agree to recommend IVM. Dr. Lowry, yeah, because the NIH is owned by the vaccine lobby. Dr. Hill, that's not something I know about. Dr. Lowry, well, all I'm saying is this smacks of corruption, and you are being played. Dr. Hill, I don't think so. Dr. Lowry, well then, you have no excuse, because your work in that review is flawed. It's rushed. It is not properly put together. Dr. Lowry points out that Hill's study ignores a host of clinical outcomes that affect patients. She scolds Hill for ignoring the beneficial effects of IVM as prophylaxis, its effect on speed to PCR negativity, on the need for mechanical ventilation, on reduced admissions to ICUs, and other outcomes that are clinically meaningful. She adds, this is bad research. Bad research. So at this point, I don't know. You seem like a nice guy, but I am really, really worried about you. Dr. Hill, okay, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation. Dr. Lowry, no, you might be in a difficult situation. I'm not, because I have no paymaster. I can tell the truth. How can you deliberately try and mess it up, you know? Dr. Hill, it's not messing it up. It's saying that we need a short time to look at some more studies. Dr. Lowry, so how long are you going to let people carry on dying unnecessarily? Up to you. What is the timeline that you've allowed for this then? Dr. Hill, well, I think that it goes to WHO and the NIH and the FDA and the EMEA. They've got to decide when they think enough's enough. Dr. Lowry, how do they decide? Because there's nobody giving them good evidence synthesis, because yours is certainly not good. Dr. Hill, well, when yours comes out, which will be in the very near future, at the same time, there'll be other trials producing results, which will nail it with a bit of luck, and we'll be there. Dr. Lowry, it's already nailed. Dr. Hill, no, that's not the view of the WHO and the FDA. Dr. Lowry, You'd rather risk loads of people's lives. Do you know if you and I stood together on this, we could present a united front, and we could get this thing, we could make it happen. We could save lives, we could prevent British National Health Service doctors and nurses, people from getting infected. We could prevent the elderly from dying. These are studies conducted around the world in several different countries, and they're all saying the same thing. Plus, there's all sorts of other evidence to show that it works. Randomized controlled trials do not need to be the be-all and end-all. But even based on the randomized controlled trials, it is clear that ivermectin works. It prevents deaths, and it prevents harms, and it improves outcomes for people. I can see we're getting nowhere because you have an agenda, whether you like it or not, whether you admit to it or not, you have an agenda. And the agenda is to kick this down the road as far as you can. So, we are trying to save lives. That's what we do. I'm a doctor, and I'm going to save as many lives as I can. And I'm going to do that through getting the message out on ivermectin. Okay. Unfortunately, your work is going to impair that, and you seem to be able to bear the burden of many, many deaths, which I cannot do. Then she asks again, would you tell me? I would like to know who pays you as a consultant through WHO. Dr. Hill, it's Unitaid. Dr. Lawry, all right. So who helped to, whose conclusions are those on the review that you've done? Who is not listed as an author? Who's actually contributed? Dr. Hill, well, I mean, I don't really want to get into, I mean it, Unitaid. Dr. Lawry, I think that it needs to be clear. I would like to know who are these other voices that are in your paper that are not acknowledged? Does Unitaid have a say? Do they influence what you write? Dr. Hill, Unitaid has a say in the conclusions of the paper, yeah. Dr. Lawry, okay.